Hi, I'm Tara Lynn of Geek Saga Entertainment, and welcome to Hot D Takes. This podcast series covers HBO's House of the Dragon episode by episode with myself, an avid reader of all things ASWAF, and my friend Manny, a Game of Thrones fan who is unsullied, aka has never read the books, being your stalwart hosts. So first things first, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, TikTok, Twitter at a Geek Saga.
And I'm Manny, the aforementioned unsullied co-host, and you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at ManissimoArt. Thanks for joining us for this episode, which will cover House of the Dragon Season 2, Episode 4, titled The Red Dragon and the Gold.
Yeah, not a Dance of Dragons or whatever Google and a couple of others told me it was before we recorded last week's episode. Anywho, as a reminder, expect spoilers from the episode we're covering, but less obvious, there will be very minimal book spoilers from Fire and Blood, which is, of course, the source material for House of the Dragon. We'll start with an episode summary, then cover what we think are the main hot takes from the episode, and conclude with an episode-specific favorites roundup.
We also have a rating system that we will, like true Targaryens, fill in when and where we please, or not at all. And that system includes rating things on a scale of 1 to 10 Targ eyebrows.
While we haven't had a new guest every week like we did in season one, knowing what was likely coming in this episode, I decided to reach out to a fellow book reader and longtime friend to join us. This friend also happens to be a longtime supporter of Geek Saga Entertainment Endeavors. So Tommy, go ahead and reintroduce yourself. It's been a while.
I know. Thank you for having me back. If there was an episode to be here and talk about it, this is the one to do it for, and I'm excited to do so. As Tara mentioned, my name is Tommy. You can find me on Instagram. TommyBoy56. I am the founder of TKOK Podcast, and you may know me as a host of New Dad Podcast or the TMC Podcast, which have been on hiatus for a bit, but could be coming back soon. So stay tuned.
Well, we're super excited to have you back with us. Now, just one last piece of business before we dig in. Don't forget that Geek Saga Entertainment does have a Patreon. With 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month, it offers tons of ways to support us and receive some great perks in return, including early access to these Hot D Takes podcast episodes. Check it out at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
And now it's time for the long and the short of it, our weekly episode summary.
Remember how last week we mentioned that Daemon didn't seem to be enjoying his haunted AF Airbnb stay at Harrenhal? Well, turns out that he's not only still dreaming about young Rhaenyra, he's also dreaming about killing her and about chasing himself cosplaying Aemon throughout the castle. Not to mention picturing his dead wife Laena in place of a serving girl, having middle-of-the-night meetings, we think, with Alice, not a maester, but here's a drink that will help you sleep rivers, and during the day being forced to put up with useless Tullys on the one hand and Blackwoods who want him to do their dirty work for them on the other. Seriously, if Daemon was going to rate this day, we're pretty sure he would give it 0 out of 10 Targ eyebrows. But I, on the other hand, am loving the true ASWAF feel of this that Game of Thrones never quite captured. But I both digress and get ahead of myself. Yes, Daemon is kinda wasting away his days at Castle Harrenhal. But despite Laris Littlefooter and Aemon explaining this to Baby Gon, the so-called king is none too happy that his forces are bothering with places like Duskendale and Rook's Rest instead.
Baby Gon's attitude certainly isn't helped by Aemon talking down to him in High Valyrian, which Baby Gon himself likely can't understand much better than he can speak. Iken has cheeseburger. And then his mom takes him down a peg, too. Of course, it soon becomes very clear that Alicent should have taken out her frustrations, many of which surely have more to do with her moon tea experience than needing to deal with a little footer to boot. Elsewhere, oops, getting ahead of ourselves again. Because while Aegon is having a hard time controlling, oops, we mean leading his council in King's Landing, Baela and Jace have been struggling with Rhaenyra's council on Dragonstone. It's unclear how long Rhaenyra was gone, but it was long enough for Baela to send Grandma a DM asking for help. Of course, Rhaenys answers the call, and even though she and Corlys seem to be in a bit of a tiff regarding his bastard son, the Sea Snake shows up to put in his two cents as well. They're able to hold Rhaenyra's small council at bay just long enough for our queen to finally return from her little business trip to King's Landing, with the goal of telling Jace about that whole Song of Ice and Fire thing like ASAP. Except first, Rhaenyra has to deal with the fact that she has arrived just in time to find out that Sir Cole House of Slaw has taken Duskendale, chopped off Lord Darkland's head, amassed a bunch more forces, and is marching on Rook's Rest. All of which have led to Jace insisting that they need to send out a dragon.
This is something that Rhaenyra actually, and not even all that reluctantly, agrees to. She wants to go herself, but listen, y'all. Maelys is the biggest dragon they have, and she and Rhaenys are also a lot more battle-seasoned. So it's the Red Queen of Dragons and the Princess of Side-Eye and Sweet Burns who are sadly destined to fall into Coleslaw's trap. Because, yep, Coleslaw plans for his actions to draw out at least one of Rhaenyra's dragons, and he's been working with Aemon, who lies in wait with Vhagar, to take over whoever Rhaenyra sends. Problem is, between Littlefooter's whispers, Aemon's snide remarks, and Alicent's outright disdainful ones, Baby Gon's had enough and takes to the skies with his dragon, Sunfire, to prove his mettle. Not that he does a very good job of that, because not only are Maelys and Rhaenys more experienced, but when Aemon and Vhagar finally do show up, they're not exactly particular about who they're dracarizing, leading to Aegon and Sunfire's crashing and burning, and leaving their exact fates unknown at the moment. As for Maelys and Rhaenys, they put up what fight they can, but the princess and her queen pair is sadly no match for the hoary old bitch Queen of Dragons. So Team Green wins the day at Rook's Rest, but in the end, we're all left asking, but at what cost? And while we're waiting to find out, let's get into hot take number one, in which Daemon tries to herd cats. Yeah. Cats of Riverlands, that is.
I'm going to say the Tullys are acting useless, and in some respects, Daemon isn't wrong when he says, no wonder the Brackens and Blackwoods didn't worry about going at each other's throats like they did, because their liege lord can't or won't do anything, and none of his family will apparently make decisions in his stead. But Daemon straight up suggesting that this kid just murder his grandfather. Bit on edge there, Daemy boy.
He just had a baby killed. So this is like not like a big deal. This is like, look, this is an old man, you know, and he's been around for a long time, you know, and every now and then you hit that age where it's time for the pillow over the face. Let's face it, this was probably the lesser of the evils as compared to the last few episodes.
True.
I actually think it shows some growth in Daemon too, because I think there is a time and place where another Daemon may have beheaded this kid. And by all accounts, the kid doesn't give him what he wants. And it's a fairly annoying conversation for him to have, as you can tell, as he, you know, moves on to look to speak with the Blackwoods. I don't know. I walked away in that glance that Sir Simon and our young Oscar Tully share was tremendous, I thought. And to be honest, I could have a whole spinoff series where it's just Daemon and Sir Simon interviewing different river lords. You know, I love this. I love the conversation with the Blackwoods too. So
like reality show talking heads.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like give me this herding of cats as its own show. Like just in the Riverlands. I love it. I love this pairing of Sir Simon and Daemon together. It's great. I could eat this up. This is, you know, one of my favorite surprises of the season.
Well, and also like Sir Simon is exasperated with Daemon a bit too. You could tell it in the last episode when he is like, okay, fine, sure, I'll call you your grace. But I still think purposely stumbled over doing so, at least like the first or second time after Daemon went off on his little tangent. And then in this episode, Sir Simon just kind of looks at little Oscar Tully and is like, go back in your trash can, Muppet.
Yep.
For sure.
Because FYI, in case anybody doesn't know, I know people who don't read the books almost certainly wouldn't. There's a bunch of Tullys named after Muppets. I think they're mostly Sesame Street characters because there's also one named Elmo, but there might be some other generic. Oh, there's a Kermit. So yeah, there's other Muppets in there too.
And they've already mentioned Oscar's grandsire, Grover.
Yes, yes. Yeah. But like Grover and Oscar, they're like legitimate sounding names, okay?
But also very non-Westerosi, which makes them stand out, you know, in a world of Aegons and Tylans and Tywins and, you know, and then there's Oscar and Grover. Grover maybe, but Oscar just seems, it really stands out.
Oh, for sure it does, but definitely not as much as Kermit and Elmo would. And that's, yeah. I am wondering, because I haven't looked into like all the new characters they've cast and whatnot. So I'm like, oh, are they going to mention Kermit or Elmo at all? Or are they just going to shy away from that?
You know, they haven't shied away from that stuff at all, I feel like. If anything, they've leaned into it. So I think we may get it. The other thing I liked about this scene too, and I know we don't have really a note to talk about it later, so I'll kind of sandwich it in here. I thought it was a good juxtaposition with, you have the young Tully Lord who, you know, when it's suggested that they go to war, he suggests war while his grandsire still like live and breathe. And then you flip a couple minutes later to the council meeting, King's Landing, and you have Aemon and Kris and Cole like blatantly plotting, you know, without Aegon's knowing. And it's just, you know, the two things I thought perhaps were done intentionally or given to us intentionally, like back to back, to kind of see that, you know, in one side respect and the other side, the total disregard of respect to the leader.
I don't think many things that they do in this show are by chance, honestly. I think most of it's by choice. So would not surprise me at all if they did that on purpose. I mean, and then also you've got Babby Oscar. I mean, he is like a babby. Okay. He's younger than Jake and Baby Gon. Then you've got Willem is a character they made up for the show.
Correct. He's the one that slays the Bracken when he's asking for Rhaenyra's hand.
When he said, "Oh, I once vied for Rhaenyra's hand," I was like, "Oh, you're that Blackwood. Okay. He was cool as shit, honestly. I was liking him until then. He was like, "Well, we'll fight for you, but only if you do our dirty work first. We'll totes fight for you, but only if you take out the Brackens with your dragon first." Like, honestly, Willem, that's pretty bold there. Pretty bold.
For sure.
Daemon of all people, pretty fucking bold.
Yeah, but again, showing some growth by our guy Daemon. He's again not beheading, or another example of why this Riverland interview show is going to be great.
When I saw it, I was like, I'm so proud of you, Daemon, for doing the bare minimum and not murdering someone. You know, and that's awesome.
He wanted to.
Because that's essentially what Allison is asking Aegon to do, right? The bare minimum, do nothing.
Bare minimum.
Just do nothing. Here we got. We got Daemon showing you exactly how to do it. Masterclass.
The problem is he's also clearly just on edge, taking drugs or something. Yeah, I don't know.
We'll hallucinogens too.
Well, we'll talk about that a little bit later for sure. But I don't know if you guys noticed this, but my God, his hair is looking more and more like disheveled. It's like run a comb through it, bro.
I'm gonna have to watch it again. I did not notice, but I will keep an eye out
like,
for that.
It was like my just
it's that humidity.
Like, oh my God,
it is very damp in the Harrenhal.
I was gonna make a reference, like it's like my Daenerys wig for Westeros and American musical. It looked great in season one of Westeros and American musical, but in season two, it was a wreck. All right. Hot take number two. Oh no, you guys, Allison's bad decisions are coming back to haunt her. Hashtag sarcasm. So just to list off the stupid decisions Allison has made that she's now having to live with. First of all, she has to take moon tea because apparently all that sexy coleslaw sexy time, ugh, whatever, got her pregnant. Then she's feeling ill as fuck from the moon tea and has to deal with Laerys Littlefooter's creepy ass self and his innuendos and obvious hints that he knows Viserys didn't actually change his mind about putting Baby Gon instead of Rhaenyra on the throne. And when she has probably just barely recovered from all of that, she finds out Baby Gon has put all of Viserys' books in storage and he's in a pissy mood himself. So she, tells him off, insisting he should be silent and basically let the more experienced, unsaid and smarter people make the decisions. She literally says, "Do simply what is needed of you, nothing." And this is definitely the final straw in his decision to take Sunfire to Rixrest. And we all saw how that turned out for him. But anyway, going back in time to Allison's decisions coming back to haunt her, thoughts on moon tea, her little visit with Laerys, etc.
I'm constantly surprised by certain decisions made by this show. In some cases, the decisions are made in an effort to make characters more likable than they came across in the books. And I think Alicent is one of those characters, you know, with the prophecy and the misunderstanding. You know, for a while, I thought that went a long way. And then just what she's kind of seemed to do this season has undone a lot of that. But in the same way that she's undone that, they've made Aegon so much more sympathetic this season. And I don't know if it's just because of that fact, you know, how good of a job the showrunner have done, that I find myself judging her more harshly in that moment when she's talking to Aegon as a mother. Her son is acting like a petulant teenager in that moment as well too. And I think, you know, like you said, she's, you know, in that conversation with Laerys, one of the things that struck me was she's talking about all the tragedies she's kind of experienced back to back to back, and then, you know, knowing that she's about to experience another one when Aegon comes back from Rook's Rest, and the guilt that's gonna have to be experienced and work through from her from having this conversation and blaming herself, I'm sure, which will come. I go back and forth, you know, all the time with, you know, these characters and how I feel about them. But yeah, I think that for me, this was one of those times where I again found myself in the impossible situation of feeling sympathetic for Aegon. And credit to Alicent, credit to the actor who plays Aegon, Carney, I know is his last name. But, you know, I just think that this was a really great scene. And yeah, 100%, this is the catalyst that leads to him going on his little drinking bender and flying to Rook's Rest. It's going to be tough because I think we're going to see a lot of characters. And, you know, I think Daemon is another example of someone who's kind of having to come and face all of the results of his actions. And you're seeing those in the dreams and his visions too. So, you know, another theme that you kind of see running through this episode.
What I liked about it going to like Alicent is that I can definitely see what you're saying, how they're like trying to, the way they're kind of like portraying her character. But this was one of those times where I actually kind of just felt bad for her. I was like, man, this girl is tired. And you can tell that she's tired. You can tell that there's a lot of inner monologue going on there because the writers are just amazing with the way they do and the directors and stuff, that you can just kind of feel it, where I'm like, yeah, this girl's going through some shit right now. She knows she heard Viserys wrong. She's got her would-be king of a son literally telling him like, dude, just sit down and just shut up. Don't do anything. Let them figure it out. Aemon is clearly on point when it comes to what he's trying to do, his tactics and stuff like that. Like, that's what the king should be doing. He's clearly, and obviously him, who I'm sure is going to be ruthless down the road. Yeah, he should be leading this war as opposed to Babygon, who's just literally, he's that kid, right? He's that kid that, you know, we all had a job and then the CEO hires their fucking son.
Right.
You know, and then you're just like, oh, God, here we fucking go. And they have no idea what the fuck they're doing. But overall, I felt bad for her. I mean, clearly it's nice to see her like getting stuck with the consequences of her actions. Like, that's very like rewarding to watch. Yeah. But I can see that there's a part of her that is just like, you can tell she's like, fuck, I fucked up.
Like I said, it's going to be even like exponentially magnified here in another episode when she's like, oh, God, you know, she's down another kid. Not that he's dead, but the wounds that he suffers, then she has to face that. It's just, and that's the thing about the story, is that it's hard to root for people. So I understand the showrunners trying to make some of the characters more likable. And here's a crazy thing. Now, Manny, you haven't read any of this, correct?
I have not.
This isn't spoiler, but like, if you were to guess how many pages from what took place in this episode, like, how many pages do you think Fire and Blood dedicates to this episode?
I'll say 5.
And it's like a page and a half. And so it's crazy, really? How much the showrunners pull from, it's stuff that isn't in the pages, but they give you more nuanced versions of it. And that's some of the crazy part, or some of the stuff that blows my mind, and how, you know, the job that these guys do making the show and all the work that goes behind it. It's like, in some cases, it's just like, you know, a couple paragraphs that they're actually turning into an hour of really riveting TV.
Dang. How well they're doing it, yeah. Versus certain other shows that had the entire, you know, fucking text in front of them.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like when they did the original Game of Thrones, they should have just added more seasons or just like did more stuff. But I can certainly see, not to defend these other writers from Game of Thrones, right? But it's easier to add stuff than it is to take away things that are important. So it's like when you're trying to get a book that's literally the size of a fucking encyclopedia and you're going to fit one season into this thing that was, I don't even remember how many episodes it was, but it certainly wasn't enough to cover whatever book that they were trying to do. Like, I kind of feel for them on that.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, can you imagine? I mean, grab your favorite book and then make one season out of it with 1 hour episodes and tell me how that's going to work out.
I think the only difference I would say is that, so we look at Game of Thrones season one, which everybody, including the vast majority of book readers, just praised up and down. The problem with it actually was when they started taking away things, but then adding other things in that were just, what the fuck are you doing? This is not well thought out. Why did you make this change? Why did Jaime become a Kinslayer in season two? I don't want to get into like a debate about Game of Thrones.
Right.
Honestly, that's not what we're talking about here. But I will say that you're right, Manny. It is really hard to truncate these very long tales into one season or two seasons or whatever they were doing from time to time. But what I think the difference is that the people who are working on House of the Dragon, they are adding stuff, but what they're adding is arguably amazing. I would say at least 90% of the time. And that's me just kind of being maybe a little bit less generous than I should be. Now, all of that said, just to go back a little bit before we move on to our next hot take, as a step parent of a teenager and a young adult who I did not raise until one of them was already legally an adult and the other one had just become a teenager, what I see in Baby Gone and the reason why I don't feel so bad for Allison is because she like literally let him run rampant and covered up all of his mistakes. And some of the things I have dealt with that are problematic with my stepkids, not that there's a lot of them, they're both very, very good kids. We're not talking about them being bad people or bad kids. Just clean up after yourselves once in a while, guys. But when you have a parent who cleans up after you all the time, guess what you don't learn how to do? Clean up after yourself. So I have, I think, less sympathy for Allison because I'm just sitting back here saying, look what you did. Like, look at what you did here. This is not entirely on you, but certainly a lot on you. I mean, and Aemond being what he is versus Aegon being what he is because Aemond saw his brother slacking off and was like, well, I'm the second son. I better like up my game so I can like actually still be somebody important because he's always going to be the first son.
Well, yeah, and he was ridiculed, really. You know, Aegon had no problem joining up with Jacerys and Lucerys and teasing. And, you know, we had the pink dread, right?
Yeah.
That moment was brought to you by Aegon, even though Rhaenyra's children bore the brunt of, I guess, the blame for that. I just feel like, again, this show has done, and the actor who plays Aegon has done such a good job, because in the book, I found him petulant. I found nothing likable or redeemable about him, nothing sympathetic. And then in the show, I just think that, I don't know. Again, I just find him sympathetic. I find him, there are moments when he's, you know, looking for approval. And I think, Tara, as you mentioned it, sometimes I try not to blame parents, but I do think like he was raised a certain way that makes it hard for you to blame him to a degree. And then he's like out there trying to people please, and he's just grasping for straws and trying to do what he thinks is going to make, you know, like in the scene where like he's like, yeah, let's give him back his sheep. And Otto's like, you can't give him back the sheep. Everyone's going to come back and ask for the sheep. You know, he just wants to do what's going to make people happy and make his friends. He's a horrible leader and you can't have him as king. And again, yeah, Allison's, she's paying for what she did is by forcing her son and thrusting him into this position that he clearly was not capable or prepared to do. And he didn't want, remember. So yeah, it's tough. Again, I want to give all credit to the actor because we're probably not going to see him for a while. That actor did a tremendous job and has been one of the best parts of the show, I think, for me. I've enjoyed watching him. And
oh, he's done amazing this season. Like, listen, we've talked a lot of shit about Team Green propaganda in this show, but as much as I talk shit about Team Green propaganda, the actor has done such an amazing job.
Yeah, he's done a really great job. So, because again, as a reader of this stuff, I did not ever expect myself to ever find myself sympathizing with him, and sure enough, here I find myself doing it all the time.
Well, let's move on to hot take number three, right?
Yeah, hot take number three. Good parenting, bad parenting, it doesn't matter. Your kids are going to get killed or maimed by Vhagar. And what we mean by this is, I think in this episode, we see some really good examples of good parenting by Rhaenyra with some tough love, you know, with Jace, but then the reveal of the Song of Ice and Fire, and then some really bad parenting by Alicent, who basically in this moment of tenderness where her son, you know, needs to hear anything but the most demeaning comment possible, that's what she delivers. It sends him into battle and then costs him a lot. So, and then in Rhaenyra's case, again, good parenting, but she still has Lucerys killed by Vhagar. So I don't know, you know, what the takeaway is, but I think that you just fear Vhagar.
The juxtaposition of Allison's interaction with Baby Gon versus Rhaenyra's interactions with Jace is really good. It reminds me a little bit of the which council is worse question we had. That was one of our hot takes. Which council is more obnoxious right now? Is it Team Green or the Black Council? But yes, you're right. Rhaenyra, she does tell Jace, like she gives him that tough love. She tells Jace that he lacks experience in a way that mirrors Alicent's words to Aegon, but it's not nasty. Alicent was just like, oh my God, I'm tired of you. Ugh. Whereas Rhaenyra was very much like, I'm telling you this because you need to hear it. You need to hear that you do not have enough experience to do this thing that you've been consistently trying to, he's been trying to shoehorn himself into being that person who takes his dragon out into these fights. And yes, there's definitely a part of Rhaenyra that's like, no, absolutely not, because of what happened to Luke. But also she's not wrong. You know, she has learned from that experience with Luke, that terrible fucking experience. Then she goes on, it looks like it's almost immediately after that council meeting where she kind of tells him, no, you do not have the experience to do this. She passes the Song of Ice and Fire story to him. And that scene, it was very tender. And like, you could just see, I'm telling this to you. Like, I didn't even believe it for the longest time, but now I have come to realize that it is the truth, I guess. Our truth, the Targaryen truth, and I'm going to pass it on to you, despite the fact that she understands that Jace doesn't have the experience to take his, what's his dragon's name, Vermax? But like, yeah, you and Vermax are not experienced enough to go out and do this. But just because I'm saying this doesn't mean I don't have respect for you as a person and understand that you are mature enough and capable enough to handle this insane information that I'm about to give you. I really loved that scene with her and Jace where she tells him the Song of Ice and Fire. And I know that this is not a book canon thing, but still, whatever. I loved it. I loved all of it.
As a parent, I also find these scenes really great. I also think that cinematically, the way that they did this scene with her revealing it and then that voiceover laid over the siege of Rook's Rest, I thought was wonderfully done in an episode where there was a lot of really great decisions from that standpoint. I thought that, yeah, that was one of the moments of the episode that really, and it's kind of like a shifting moment because everything before that is really built up to this moment that we're about to see. I think the people who felt moved by this episode, it was the last 25 minutes of the episode that really had their emotions flying high. And that's the beginning of it. That's the tone setting for it in my eyes.
I do just want to interject before we forget to insert any ratings other than what I jokingly put into the summary. I would give 9.5 out of 10 Targ eyebrows for the way the whole scene with her telling Jace the prophecy was done. Like you said, the cinematography aspects of it, but also, oh my God, the acting, they were perfect. The actor, they were perfect.
Yeah.
So the takeaway that I got from that with her telling him the song, I really felt like she was setting that up as to like, you need to be the leader. You're obviously not experienced to go out and do this stuff. She was kind of doing the same thing almost that Allison was, but Allison was more like, oh, well, you're fucking inept. And the way I saw like Rhaenyra talking to him was more like, you're going to be leader one day. You can't just go out there and like do these kind of things. Like, yeah, he's not ready for it, of course, you know, at the time. But the way I kind of saw it and the way they were filming it, like with them walking away and then just like talking to him or whatever, that's what ran through my head. That's the heir of the fucking crown right there, you know? And she's just raising him in that direction now.
For sure. And I think there's an aspect of it that's like she's trying to get him to understand the bigger picture in that moment, which is, hey, I forget exactly how she puts it, but what we're about to unleash, I wouldn't be doing that unless the stakes were this high. And then you get the, you know, really we get to see what the true cost of dragon warfare is. You know, that battle, one of the things that struck me was just like how inconsequential the actual armies are. You have all these, you know, hundreds of armed warriors, and it's just really like about, you know, what's happening above them. And that's really the true outcome of the fight, of the battle. And it was just, you know, I thought really well done. Again, I can't say enough about how well I thought that transition really was. I would probably give that, why not give it 10 Targ eyebrows?
They filled them all in this time.
Yeah, fill them all in. Since I was brought on from a book reader's perspective, and I did mention how I think this show is going above and beyond to make these characters more sympathetic. I think this is, again, a really great example because, you know, we get a page and a half, really, of explaining what took place from Eric and Arik's death to Rook's Rest. Mm-hmm. And really what's given to us in that page and a half is the fact that Rhaenyra is pretty much absent. And they say that she's absent because she's so grief-stricken. She's so grief-stricken from Lucerys. So you don't get any of this like leadership that she shows in the council or with her son. You get none of that. You basically get someone who's an absentee leader, and a lot of the credit is given to Corlys. I just want to point that out, that the show does a great job of giving Rhaenyra more, I guess, credit, but and that's probably not the right word. It's a more fleshed out character. It's more complex and I think in a much more positive light.
Hot take number four. Like the Cylons and Dutch Vanderlyn before him, Coleslaw totally has a plan, y'all.
I really did not want to give fucking Kristen Cole a hot take, but I had to. I hate it. I hate myself for this. He seriously has such a stick up his ass about this plan. I know he has to keep it mostly secret, mainly the Aemond and Vhagar part, but also, my God, just like act like a real person sometimes, my dude. I know that Gawain Hightower made that Dorne dig at him and almost got them all in some hot water on the road to Rosby, but he's also the Dowager Queen who you're fucking. Yep. He's also her brother. Mm-hmm. So maybe don't treat him like trash.
Yep.
I just... And listen, it wasn't a bad plan. And I hate it. I hate that I had to say that. Team Green propaganda.
Look, I just can't stand the fucking guy. I don't even fucking care. Just looking at him makes me sick to my stomach.
Isn't he, or is his haircut like extra douchey this season too?
It is extra douchey. He started off kind of douchey. Like he kind of had like this trashy look to him.
No, early on, the first couple episodes before he like... does the whole like let's go to wherever and raise lemons together. I don't remember what the fuck he said to Rhaenyra. Before that shit happened, like he had the flippy hair and it was kind of fine, whatever. It wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen. But now that he's got this, his hair is douchey. I don't even know how to describe it.
It's kind of a version of the Clooney Gladiator cut.
Ooh, kind of. Maybe that's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
I think it's a little bit of that. Hot take. Captain Eye Candy can commit atrocities to my body and to anything he wants. I'm going to be.
Oh my God. Even Patrick has rescinded his ideas on this. Come on.
I'm going to be a Kristen Cole apologist here. No, granted, he's not my favorite character in the dance. That would have to go to Adam Hull. Again, I think a lot of the characters in this story are just reprehensible and non-likable, to be totally honest. And the show has done a better job of making them likable. Great. Kristen Cole, I've always likened him, the hatred of Kristen Cole in the fandom with like a Game of Thrones, where you would have people who are like huge Jaime Lannister or Tyrion or Sandor Clegane fans, but they like hate Catelyn.
Hey now. I love Jaime and Sandor and also love Catelyn. Just say. Oh,
so that's okay for me. My problem is when someone likes Jaime or Tyrion or Sandor, these people who have had their own discretions, to put it lightly, but then want to crucify Catelyn for her treatment of Jon Snow. There are plenty of those people in the fandom. I'm just saying, those people I find in the Venn diagram of life tend to overlap almost 100% with people who love Daemon but hate Kristen Cole.
I need this Venn diagram. How would you even create that? There's so many characters.
It's such a great Venn diagram. But it exists in my mind mostly.
I actually have a response to that one about Daemon.
Go ahead.
And Sir Kristen Cole. It's simple, right? Daemon, I know I can't trust him. He's not trying to feed me bullshit like the way Kristen Cole is. Kristen Cole's like, look at me. I'm such an honorable, noble person. And look at me. I'm such a paladin. And like, no, I only do good. And meanwhile, he's doing this shit. Daemon is like, look, bro, I'm a fuck up. You want to get a drink? We're going to go do fucked up shit. And by the way, don't turn your back on me. I may cut your baby's head off. At least I know who I'm dealing with here. Daemon, yeah, he's a demon. Absolutely.
Right.
Kristen Cole's a fucking snake.
Fair enough.
Now, with respect to like Tyrion and Catelyn stuff, I'm the same way. I liked all of them. You know, I didn't have any like weird qualms about any of them because I did like Jaime Lannister also. When it comes to like Coleslaw's character, it's that he just comes off as a snake. He comes off as like who are those people on the internet, the guys that they never get laid? Incel. Like he just comes off as that kind of person to me. Where Daemon, he's a fucking asshole. Like absolutely. And I wouldn't fucking trust him at all. But I know him. I know I can't trust him.
Fair enough.
So I think that's the difference.
Well, he also doesn't pretend that you can trust him. And I think that's part of it too.
Yeah. And ultimately what we're talking about, right, is like Daemon, probably a pretty good hang. Kristen, if you had to hang, probably not a good hang.
No.
Yeah, no.
Like both of them are going to stab you in the back, but you're going to at least be prepared for it or expect it from Daemon. Whereas Coleslaw over here is going to be like, you'll win the football game and he'll dump a fucking jug of coleslaw on your head instead of a jug of Gatorade. Okay. Like he'll do something stupid as hell like that. And it's like, okay, well, shouldn't have believed you all this time.
Yeah, with those dark skin and dark hair and blue eyes, he can dump whatever he wants on my head.
I will say, side note, me during the battle, coleslaw is down. I repeat, coleslaw is down. This is not a drill. Me, a few minutes later, I'm already upset about Melee's and Rainey's, and now I have to see this asshole get back on his feet. And like, you know, book reader that I am, I knew he wasn't going to die, but there's always that hope. Maybe they'll make a change. There have been things that happened earlier or later than they did in Fire and Blood and in Game of Thrones. God knows. That was just like a fucking free for all. You never knew after like season 4 what was going to happen. So hot take number 5. Everybody wants to be a cat. That is from a song from the Aristocats. It's a very old Disney movie. I know this is silly, but after the Damon hurting cats thing, I was like, how many cat references can I make in this?
We throw in there.
Everybody wants to be a cat. Baby Gone, for one. You cannot tell me anyone saw that scene of him knocking the pitcher off the table as anything other than a cat joke. On a more serious note, oh my God, those scenes showing Baby Gone with Sunfire and then Rainey's with Melee's and the dragons just like rubbing their heads on their people like good kittens. Like, oh. I can't, even especially as we know what comes next now. I knew when I was watching it, honestly, even Manny, like you had to have known the bad things were going to happen. It's literally just like a cat rubbing their scent on you. Oh, they're being so sweet. They're hugging their kittens in the face. Oh,
a little boop on the nose.
Yeah. And I was thinking about it and I was like, should it be compared to like dogs? No. Should it be compared to horses? Not even, because only cats bump you in the face like that.
And George has, I mean, he likes all animals, but he's a cat lover and owner. Mm-hmm. So I think that probably tracks as well with him. I mean, I think there's something that was done with this episode, and perhaps I'd have to go back and look and see if it's something that I'm noticing more so, but it's just a lot of us, whether you are a dog owner or a cat owner, if you're a pet owner in general, I think you could relate to a lot of the stuff that you saw in these episodes, or in this episode, I should say, you know, whether it was Aegon getting ready for battle and his interaction, or yeah, that last look of Melee's looking back at Rhaenys.
We'll get into that. Don't even start me on that. Not yet.
You know, there was a lot of stuff there that all of us pet owners in the world watched and related to and connected to. And I think that's why it made it so, this episode so moving. And people who were familiar with the story long before these episodes aired, I think the thing I heard over and over again was just people not ready for the deaths of the dragons. With a story full of atrocities, it was the dragon deaths that they were not ready for.
Call PETA on these fucking dragon riders. My God, guys, why doesn't PETA exist in this world? PETA is also awful. I am not interested in PETA by any means. Let me be very clear on that. But you know what I mean.
Oh, for sure. And I think that was something when Fire and Blood came out, I remember that was a thing too. People were hungry for anything new. But, you know, I remember like people reading it, devouring it, and just the people I spoke to, at least, it was kind of like, have you gotten to the dance yet? I just think again that in a season where they've done a lot of things really well, how they've connected to pet owners with the dragons has been excellent.
Well, and I think too, I am a cat, a dog, and a horse person. Obviously, I have not had a horse in a very long time because they are expensive animals. When it comes down to it, the dragons are cats. Yes, the Targaryens ride them, but they are cats. They are the ones that would be like, I'm going to take my little claw and knock everything off the table, because even one little claw knocks out, you know what I mean? They're, as much as you want to like say, oh, they're like horses. No, I mean, yes, they're big and dangerous like horses can be if you're an idiot and don't know what you're doing, but their attitude is cat-like.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll go to hot take number 6. Will Aemon learn the meaning of can't get revenge and keep a spotless reputation? Asking for a friend.
It wasn't so bad when it was just him kind of mocking Baby Gon by switching to High Valyrian in the council meeting, because he knows Baby Gon can barely understand or speak it, of course. And let's be real, Baby Gon deserved to take some shit after what happened with Aemon last week. Okay.
I think this was like the best throwing of shade. It was amazing. It was a masterclass. I think the scene was fantastic.
And we can even, I think, kind of brush off Aemon plotting with Coleslaw, because the need for the planned secrecy was obviously paramount. And also Vhagar is like a hole in one for them. in any battle. Listen, Baby God, I know you want to prove yourself and you got a dragon too, but what one or two or possibly even three dragons can stand against Vhagar? Just saying. But oh my God, that moment when Aemon looks right at Baby Gon, who is struggling on Sunfire and clearly losing the battle against Meleys and Rhaenys. And Aemon seems to aim the Dracarys. I don't even know what to call it. Like, other than the Dracarys, like, I don't know what else to call
the
it.
The Dracarys.
Yeah, the Dracarys.
So he pulls out his Dracarys and he's like,
the Dracarys Noir.
But yeah, but it's really, oh my God. The Dracarys just sprays cologne right in their face.
Got you, bitch.
But like, he aims that shit right at his brother. It's like, oh my God. And yeah, not to mention coleslaw. And I don't want to get into the actual dragon fight in this one. We're just talking about Aemon versus Baby Gon. But not to mention coleslaw, finding Aemon bent over slash near Baby Gon and Sunfire in the forest. And Aemon has his sword out. And the fact that it seems like Aemon probably didn't do anything to make that whole situation worse, but also very possibly slash probably only because he realized he didn't have to. There's so much to unpack here, going from point A to D, from point Aemon to Dracarys. I don't know.
And I think we glaze over a big point of it too, which is the fact that Aegon's not supposed to be there. And that scene where Aemon's sitting there and he sees him fly over, the way I read that scene was he's annoyed, like a fly in the ointment. I can't believe he showed up, and he wants to take off really quick to kind of be like, well, I don't want him to get the glory. But then he kind of thinks, he takes a beat and he's like, actually, wait, let's kind of wait because this could actually take care of itself. And then I could kind of kill two birds with one stone. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, I know we're not going to get too in the weeds about this, but my role here as being someone who read the books, in the books, what happens, it's not implied that Aegon wasn't supposed to be there. No. It's implied that Kristen Cole's plan was to set the trap with Aegon and Aemon. And then what happens is Meleys gets a hold of Sunfire, and then Vhagar grabs them and they all kind of crash in a fiery ball. The way they explain it is like 2 or 3 hours it takes for like the dust and fire to settle before they realize like who's alive and who's dead. And Vhagar kind of comes out of the fire and smoke alive while they find Rhaenys dead and Sunfire near death along with Aegon. It's a very subtle difference. I saw some people actually voicing opinions that they thought that it took some agency away from Rhaenys the way they did it, which I don't necessarily agree with.
Let's leave that discussion for our final hot take. For this point, I want to hear that. I think for this one, I want to stick with just the Aemon and Baby Gon interaction situation, only because we got a lot more to say about that little dance. I think that it started out as just something so tiny, like, okay, Aemon, you don't like what Baby Gon did to you last week. You're pissed off. Fine, whatever. Take your revenge in this the High Council. Like, yeah, whatever. Fine. He gets it in like several ways, not just by speaking High Valyrian, but because Aegon also clearly understands that there's a little tete-a-tete happening between Aemon and coleslaw that Aegon is like, I don't want this. I don't want this at all.
I think he also noticed resentment from other members in the council in that moment too. You know, it's kind of this moment that's it's really starting to like...
I don't know if I would call it resentment. I would call it more like they're all just kind of twiddling their thumbs. Like, we don't want to be here. We know you're an idiot. I don't think any of them know High Valyrian except maybe the Maester. There's no way that Lannister, that random Lannister
for
knows
sure, yeah.
No. High Valyrian. Like, the Maester most likely does. Littlefooter over here? No way does that asshole know High Valyrian. I mean, I hope. I don't think so.
I don't know. I did find myself wondering, like, who at that table possibly could know it. At the end of the day, to be fair, too, like, Aemon didn't count on seeing Aegon show up at Rook's Rest to a degree. So it's like he only dealt with the hand that was given to him in that moment. And I think if, you know, we could fast forward and talk to an interview and ask Aemon, like, hey, dude, I don't think it was as much about removing his brother as it was just about like his brother being in the way and being like, I'm not going to miss my shot because you're standing right there.
I'm not throwing away my shot.
Yeah, that's for the Hamilton fans out there. Because it's a departure from the books, I do appreciate the discourse that this sort of situation or this sort of description of the situation brings forth.
Just to be clear about who may or may not no High Valyrian on that council. I do not know for sure. I don't think you need to know High Valyrian to understand that Aemon just served his brother.
For sure.
And oh, yeah. Aegon was just like, blah, blah, blah. I can't has war. It's like, I can't, like you said earlier, I can't has cheeseburger, but I can't has war instead. The cat references in this episode.
These thoughts really fall into my favorites roundup, so I'm going to save it there. Because I have something to say about Aemon and like where his character is going. But yeah, when it comes to like that council thing, that's like the start of this shit. I mean, let's not forget that his brother fucking humiliated him. And he humiliated him in like a personal situation that was at, you know, at the club. And the king was with his friends, right? So Aemon's like, that's cool. I'm going to humiliate you. But he doubled down on it because he did it in the fucking council room all the fucking leaders. And he's like, you don't embarrass me. Yeah, that's cool. Like, yeah, I'm sleeping with the same person who I was paid for the first time. But you're supposed to be the king and you can't even fucking talk Valyrian. You're no fucking leader. Like, I felt like the way he showed him up was really... It's like in life, right? There's like two kinds of people. There's like the headhunter and there's like the surgeon. So like when you fight someone, you have people who punch people in the face, hoping that they're going to knock the other person out. And then you have the one guy who just like prison style shanks him in the neck real quick. And just so the guy bleeds out immediately. It's surgery is what it is. And that's what Aemon is doing here, you know, because he could have said something back in that club, but he didn't. He just sat there and like waited. And as much as I fucking hate Team Green, I'm sorry. I have to admire the shit out of that dude. It's like he just waited. And the second his ass was up there, he was like, you know what? I'm going to fucking make a fool out of this fucking asshole right now. And he wasn't even doing it in the sense of, oh, well, you did this to me. It's like, no, it's that he clearly knows his brother has no right sitting there. He doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. And I'm going to prove it to him just by speaking another language, just for 2 minutes.
Can I ask you guys a question? Have either one of you seen the movie Teen Witch?
I feel like I have. Is it an older movie?
Yes. Oh, okay. Like 80s. This like very nerdy girl realizes she has witchy powers and gets herself super hot. And then she makes her nerdy friend have a wrap off with popular dudes. Okay. And all I can think
is like, I do remember this movie.
Like Manny's talking about like being in the club, and all I can think is like, Aemon is that nerdy friend that's suddenly been imbued with the power of like wrapping off with his brother and High Valyrian, and his brother fails miserably. And he's like, take that.
Well, do you know what this moment? I grew up in a very Latin neighborhood where we were like one of the only Caucasian families. So we found ourselves like just interacting and being around a lot of different Latin families. And most of them spoke perfect English. But there were always moments where my friend would basically fuck up. For me, they were speaking in English at the table, but then they would switch to Spanish. And it was like this moment where she was like, she would just basically read them the fucking riot act, right? In Spanish. I didn't know what the fuck they were saying, but I knew it wasn't good. I knew my friend was getting just laid into by his mom, but she was doing it in Spanish to save his pride a little bit. But at the same time, I'm like, dude, I know you're getting lit up.
Man, he has to know exactly what he's saying.
So I could relate to the people at the council table at that moment.
That is very much a Latin thing. My mom does it. I'm Cuban, Puerto Rican, you know. The second my mom, because the thing is that we're very like Americanized, but the second my mom started talking to me in Spanish, that's when she's saying something like extremely serious or she's ready to lose like her shit on me, right?
Right,
she'll do the same thing. We'll be at the table and then she'll just start talking to me in Spanish and nobody knows what's going on. And I'm like, fuck.
Yeah, right? I told my wife, I'm like, that's the abuela moment. That's the abuela.
That's what it is. Yep. That's the abuela moment. Yep.
I got to prepare myself for this next one. Hot take number 7. We could have missed the pain, but we'd have had to miss the dance. Garth Brooks, you guys. Seriously. Oh, yeah. We could have missed the pain, but we'd have had to miss the dance. I'm a little bit at a loss for words here. I will say I can't really imagine them doing a more perfect job with the cinematography, the CGI, et cetera, in this dragon fight. But still, yeah, I'm at a loss for words other than RIP to the Red Queen and our Princess of Side Eyes and Sick Burns. Crying.
That's right.
Like, I'm not doing it right now. But last night I was like, the criteria. You get that feeling in your throat. Dean's sitting next to me, and I know he doesn't feel as strongly about these things as I do. And I'm just like, don't do it. You know, and also, you know, poor Sunfire too. Sunfire did not deserve this shit. Just all the lead up we joke about, like, everybody wants to be a cat. But that whole lead up where you know the bad things, like, you know they're dying when Aegon is like, hey babe, like, fist bump. Yeah. I love you so much. And then Maelys is just like, Maelys and Rhaenys are just like, cuddle. Wipe your scent on me like a cat does. It's cool. I mean, everything about this whole scene was, like, heartbreaking, heart-wrenching, and just, I don't know, fucking perfect. I'm done with what I'm going to say for now. I'm sure I will have more to say based on what you guys say, but...
I honestly knew she was going to die as soon as they started that scene when she's like, I need to go there. And, like, nobody really stopped her and she went. And I was like, and then when she's there, like, with, like, Maelys and stuff, it just reminded me of, like, me and my cat. But it was just so fucking goddamn honorable. If that had been my wife, I'd have been like, look, I know you're going to die, but you need to fucking do this shit and go give them fucking hell. It was extremely fucking touching. And I fucking hated it, dude, because I just saw her ass. I sent Tara a TikTok of her ass at, like, an award show looking all like a queen and shit, in, like, a normal dress. And I was like, holy shit, she's fucking gorgeous.
I was like, what? Mama, take me away.
Yeah, I was like, oh man, I didn't know I was into older women.
One thing I do want to say is all the lead up from the first three episodes, particularly the last two episodes, like her little sweet in bed scene with Corlys, him feeding her bread scene in the last episode, even their little, like, tiff where they kind of seem to, they must have make up afterwards because he also goes to Dragonstone and, like, helps her. It was clear to any, well, and I guess, Manny, I don't know, because you haven't read anything, so I knew this was going to happen, but, like, even you who hasn't read anything, you had to have seen, like, oh, they're paying extra special attention to Princess Side-Eye and Sweet Burns over here, so.
No, I knew it because that's how it was with, what other show was I watching? I can't remember. There was some show, it was like Game of Thrones, right? Like, but they did the opposite. They made you hate someone so bad because they're getting you ready to kind of want to keep watching when they maim this person later, right? When they did her and I saw what they were doing, like, I already knew that the season wasn't going to end well for her already at that point. And you're right, with the episodes where she's, like, in the little tiff or she's feeding him the bread and all this stuff. And I'm looking at this, I'm like, this is the perfect example of how you write a strong female character. This is how you write it, like this, like golden. I fucking loved it because she still had this sense of, like, femininity. You have this person who's both. She's feminine and she's, like, vulnerable around him, but then she's also this fucking commanding person where you have no choice but to be led into battle by her. I mean, it was just fucking golden. So I already knew what they were doing. I already knew it. And then they did the thing, and then Maelys is all cuddling up on her, and I'm thinking about my cat who's sitting on the couch next to me, and I'm petting her, and I'm just like, if I'm going to die, I want to ride this cat out into battle is what I want to do. And I'd be on my bitchy-ass cat, you know? My cat's like a little bitch to everyone, but to me, she loves me. And there was one scene in it during the battle that I thought she was going to get away, where I was like, oh, shit, okay. Because at first I was like, well, and then I was like, oh, maybe they're not going to kill her. Maybe she'll, like, go. And the way they're filming it and then Vhagar's coming up, I'm like,
no, she had to go. Girl. You see that look on her face where she's like, she knew what she was going into.
She kind of turns back, right? I mean, that was my read on it. Like, there's a point where she can essentially get away.
Absolutely.
I think it's after she saw Vhagar, right? When she saw Vhagar is when she turns around, I think.
Yeah, there's a moment where, after Sunfire falls to the ground her and Vhagar, like, tumble to the ground, which, again, that's kind of the way that it goes in the book. They go to the ground and then the dust clears and only Vhagar comes out. But yeah, mainly she has this point. And, you know, like, her kids are dead in her mind. She's lost both of her kids, and she just met her husband's bastard who, you know, she's probably kind of starting to put two and two together about her kids aren't alive, and I guess she has both of her grandchildren alive as far as heirs to Driftmark and whatnot. But she's 55 in the books. I'm trying to remember how old she is in the show, but, you know, I wonder a little bit, you know, because obviously for me selfishly, I want her to fly, just keep flying back to Dragonstone, and her value to the council and just her value in terms of a dragon also in a world where dragons, each one that dies, become increasingly more valuable.
First, she knew about the bastards. It was funny because Dean, who has not read anything last night, he was like, why is she flirting with this dude? And I was like, oh, no. That's not what this is. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I actually felt like she was more chiding Corlys in that, without saying our actual blood children are dead, why is this guy who literally saved your life not being raised up? I think she was actually like, yes, there's a reason for her to be fucking upset about it. In this time in our life, I would fucking divorce Dean and also sick my sisters on him to ruin his life if I found out that he like had a bastard child outside of our marriage. But this is a different situation, right? So she knew about them from what I could see. She wasn't okay with it, obviously, but it's like, oh, what are you going to do? They exist. Yes, I wanted her to just keep going to Dragonstone because you're right. And it's not just Maelys. Like, yes, Maelys is the biggest dragon they have. So that's important. But way more important is Rhaenys' council itself. Even in this episode, one of the council members, I can't remember which one, is like, well, who are you to tell us what to do? Rhaenyra didn't name you Hand. And it's like, I mean, she fucking should have. I mean, yes, she's the queen that never was. She's the like forever princess, like whatever nicknames you want to call her from the books. Like Rhaenys is a bad fucking ass. And not only that, she's fucking smart. And she has been giving, and obviously a lot of the advice giving and stuff are things that they have added into the show that didn't exist in the books that, you know, like maybe it was background shit that we never knew about, but it wasn't printed in the text a lot of the time. And Rhaenys was the hand of the queen without being given that official title in the show. I mean, because she was giving her the absolute best advice all the fucking time. And she was the one who was staying back, as we mentioned in our last episode, like staying back after the council meeting and being like, bitch, where's my grandfather's crown? You better fucking man up and like start realizing that Rhaenyra is your queen. You know what I mean? Like she is, I loved her in season one. Okay. And I knew what they were fucking doing. I knew what they were fucking doing in season two. But man, they really like went over the top with making her like this indispensable part of Rhaenyra's life and council, and then taking her away from us in the most fucking depressing way possible. I mean, Manny, you mentioned when Maelys looks back at her and you see that Maelys is looking at Rhaenys and the light goes out of Maelys' eyes and Rhaenys just gives. I mean, she was gonna die anyway, I'm sure, right? How would she survive that fall, etc.? But
two things I'll say just really quickly. I've been effusive in my praise of the show so far. One thing I've been critical of the show this season, especially, was, you know, I feel like they delivered these big moments like the blood and cheese or the death of Eric and Arik. But for whatever reason, and I don't think all of the reasons are totally in control of the people creating the show. I think some of it has been forced upon them by HBO wanting this season specifically to be 8 episodes. I didn't feel as emotionally invested into little Jaehaerys and Eric and Arik as I felt I really could have been. Whereas here with the death of Rhaenys, like you said, they went above and beyond and I felt like completely invested. And this is what I was wanting in those other big moments of this season, was to feel like this. The other thing is just, again, we talked about pet owners and how, you know, we can relate to this. If anyone has ever had the unfortunate experience of putting a pet down, I think there was like something in that moment that just like connected. You just really, like you've been there. You've seen that moment when like you said, Tara, the light goes out and it's just,
oh yeah,
they captured it so well in that moment, and just how much despair there is as a person who's had a connection to that animal. And that was wonderfully captured, I thought.
Everything about it was like beautiful, but also just so fucking.
I just hope the Bram Stoker hairstyle comes back now. Just hope that becomes popular. That's my one single prayer from this.
I'm gonna say this, dude. Rhaenys was one of the best characters on the show, and they gave her a beautiful fucking death. It was so tragic, but the scene that they showed where the dragon's just falling downward, you know, and it's just like she's facing the sky pretty much and just like holding on to this thing. It was so fucking heartbreaking, but it was just like so beautiful also, where I was like, you know what? You had a glorious fucking death.
When she sees the light go out, she lets go. Oh my God, yep. I'm tearing up about it again. Okay, anyway, okay. We're going to talk about this more in our favorites roundup. I want to start this favorites roundup by saying one of my favorites, weirdly enough, was the awkward conversation between Allison and the Maester. Lol, as if he would have told you anything he thought you wouldn't want to hear when she asks him, do you think Viserys actually wanted Aegon to be king? Yeah. And he's like, no, we didn't talk about that. And it's like, yeah, dude, you literally cared for this guy his entire like sick bed life, which was most of his life with Allison.
Yep.
But yeah, he didn't say anything about that to you. Okay. Yeah. But also, of course, the maester wouldn't fucking say this to you, Allison, you dumbass.
Fucking dumbass. The maester should have been like, I don't know. What do you think of it?
Yeah, no. He definitely wanted your son Aegon. Definitely. Yeah. That's what he wanted.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Answering for a question sure. with a question, though, is also is always a
red flag.
Really, Allison? You thought that this guy would actually tell you the truth?
That's kind of like the thing with the Allison story arc that's going on right now, is you can tell she's just fucking losing it.
For sure.
She knows she fucked up. The fact that she even asked the maester that, you're right. Was the maester really going to be like on it? No, it's not going to be at all. But you can tell where her state of mind is going here. That's what I think makes her relatable to me, to where it's like, okay, she's lost her shit. There's people that I do not like in life, and then I just randomly happen to run into them. They're having a fucking breakdown or they're having something, and I have no choice but to be like, fuck, I've been here. I can fucking relate to this shit. It's the human part of me, I guess. Don't get me wrong. We're ready to fucking lay dynamite on the fucking tracks of the Team Green propaganda train, but that actually made me fucking feel a little bad for her, you know?
Totally.
Like, oh, girl, you really thought.
It's one thing for one person to make a bunch of like really bad decisions, but it's another thing for them to actually like break down, because in the moment they didn't realize they were bad decisions, and now they're breaking down because they're realizing it. I guess, again, it's a way to make that character sympathetic, because before that, there was very little to no sympathy. In some cases, I think people have probably felt that it's watered down certain things, but ultimately, I don't think it's necessarily been the worst thing to make characters more gray.
One of the other things I wanted, and this is very brief, lol at the bumbling Kingsguard. They're sitting in the Green Council meeting, and one of the kings, he's like pulling at the neck. He's like, and it's like, okay, that's fine, whatever. But then when Aegon walks into his room or wherever, and Allison is there like looking through his bookcases for daddy's books, she's like, where are the books? And he says something, you know, he's like, I mean, they're not here. Like, I got rid of them. And eventually he tells her, it's like I burned them. I just moved them or whatever. But he like nods for the Kingsguard to leave, and two of them just like, it's very Monty Python. They just like bump into. did anybody else notice that?
I did notice that. Yeah.
Because Dean was like, was that on purpose or was it a mistake? And I was like, I'm pretty sure it was actually on purpose, because this came very soon after the council meeting where Aemon talked shit in High Valyrian, where he was like, oh, you like posted a bunch of imbeciles to your Kingsguard, dumbass.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was fucking funny. I thought it was a really, the Kingsguard pulling out his armor, like trying to get a breath, was before Aemon said any of this. But then like after Aemon says this, and then there's like three of them just kind of randomly standing around in the doorway, and Aegon's like shooing them with his eyeballs and the two of them just like bump into each other. And it was like, no, there's no, with this show, there's no way that was a mistake. It's a little bit Monty Python, but I thought it was fucking hilarious.
I thought it was very well done. Again, just Aegon and his, God, what do they call him? The Aegoons over at History of Westeros. It's like the Aegoons. Yeah, I believe that's what they call his posse, the Aegoons. Bringing comedic relief wherever they go.
Also, just Alice Rivers. I think I mentioned her last week, too, so I don't know how much we have to get into this. Just saying Alice Rivers is amazing in this episode. Tommy, what are your favorite moments?
So I touched on a lot of them already. As I said, I think Daemon and Sir Simon, just in general, their interactions with River Lords are great. I think that the fact that you have this battle at Rook's Rest happening with Sir Criston and multiple dragons, and all the while Westeros's baddest man is sitting in Harrenhal just tripping on hallucinogenics. This is what he wants. Like, he wants to go and he wants to kill Aemon. He wants to kill Vhagar. He hates Criston Cole. He wants battle, but he's sitting in this damp castle just tripping. And I want to know, like, I know it's up for hot debate, and I don't think there's been much in the way of confirming anything from the people behind the show, but what is Alice Rivers making? Is that Weirwood pace or Jojen?
Oh, there's definitely some Weirwood shit going on there, because the Weirwood sap is red. that has to be part of it. And also anybody who's listening to this who hasn't read the books, this isn't really a spoiler because it's something that wasn't really shown. Was it ever shown in Game of Thrones? So in The Song of Ice and Fire, the five books that have already been published a billion years ago. So sorry, not sorry. This is not spoilers anymore, guys. Like the last book was literally published like 13 plus years ago. There's this whole thing where Bran is eating this like paste while he's in the caves way up in the north with Brendan Rivers. There are theories about, is it just weirwood paste, like a weirwood sap and who knows, like acorns or whatever? Or is Jojen's blood in there? Because Jojen has kind of like disappeared. So weirwood slash Jojen paste. Obviously, there's no Jojen in this situation. Is there blood of a person in there with Alice Rivers? I don't know. I did watch the making of the episode, and the making of the episode literally was like not witchy at all. We're trying to make her not witchy. Like she's ageless because of her porcelain skin and her outfit that fits in but doesn't quite, and her raven black hair. But it sounded like they were saying we're not making her a witch. All of that said, who knows what's in that drink she served Damon, because also it's like, whoa, man, he apparently supposedly met her in the middle of the night, drank that drink, and then the next thing he knows, he's like woken up in a meeting with a Blackwood and doesn't even know like who he's with or where he's with. He's
nope.
The sound is all fucking wonky. So I don't know.
And in the books, they say that Alice Rivers, some say that she's been at Harrenhal for hundreds of years. So it's just like, and the thing is like, as a show watcher or even a book reader, you want to dismiss that out of hand. But, you know, show watchers, we have Melisandre, right? We've been already given someone who is some sort of, I watched the same thing you did. And they said they've gone out of their way to make her non-witchy. But then they also describe her as a woods witch.
Yeah, both can be true.
You're making a big effort to do something and then you out of hand call her woods witch. So we'll see. It'll be interesting because she certainly is one of the characters I was most fascinated in the books. I like the direction they're going with. I'll be honest, given some of the things that I hope that they did in the north and understanding that some of that probably had to get cut short and seeing how much time they're spending on the dreams and visions that Damon's having. Listen, I love a disembodied talking head as much as everyone. I think that a lot of this is, as you said in the opening, like in the spirit of A Song of Ice and Fire, so much more than a lot of stuff I've seen on screen before. I just hope there's a payoff with it. I just really do. Yes. For some of us book readers, we have an idea of what the payoff could be. You know, I know the finish line, understanding where we go from here to get there. To me, I see a very high ceiling. I also see that there could be a very low floor with this. And if they spend a lot of time, I'm going to have some heavy expectations because they could have put time into other things that I was hoping to see.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that so far, Damon's dreams slash vision slash whatever you want to call them, because like they seem kind of to be like almost a conglomeration of both, have been on point. But I think that if it continues in this vein of, I don't want them to keep using these as like a reason to bring actors back, as much as I love Millie Alcock, okay, like
right.
Amazing to see her again in this episode. As much as it was fucking hilarious to see Damon cosplaying as Aemon. Okay, honestly, the first time I watched it, I was like, wait a minute, what? And then I watched it again and I was like, oh no, that totally is exactly what I thought it was.
Yeah.
It was Damon as Aemon, you know, in this whole like, oh, well, I created him sort of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, but at some point you have to leave the sort of dreamy, creepy, haunted Airbnb behind and move into, I don't know, like a VRBO that's like more legit.
And you know, with Vhagar now no longer in King's Landing, maybe that leaves some sort of opening for him.
And also, Maedhlys was bigger than Caraxes, but Caraxes is like the windy boy. He's pretty fucking hardcore. No. So
no, for sure. That's one thing I'll say. Like, so I loved everything. And I know we're talking about things we love. One thing I thought they missed out on an opportunity for, and they kind of did it, but I thought they could have done it to a larger degree, is that scene where Vhagar comes in over the trees. I've always taken from the books, one of the things is like how the dragons will like block out the sun. That's one of the ways they describe it. And they kind of show him like eclipse the sun for a moment, but I just think there could have been a moment where, like, if they showed people on the battlefield and it got really dark, you know, as he crossed over, just showing again his immensity.
Her immensity. Yes, they have both genders,
don't they? So we should, we should call them all theys. I think they've done a decent enough job with that, but I thought they had a missed opportunity there again to just really show the immensity of Vhagar versus the other dragons in that moment.
I think they had her like way too far up in the sky.
Yeah.
It was obvious that she was way bigger, but it wasn't as obvious as it could have been.
And there's a scene with where Lucerys dies and where that's very clear. It's like that one shot with the lightning and then you see the dragon Vhagar over Lucerys's dragon and you really get the idea of how much bigger Vhagar is. But I just thought that was a moment where it just could have like really blocked out the sun.
Listen, like size matters, y'all.
In this case, it truly does.
Anytime they can.
Yeah, in this case, it truly does. But to your point about Maelys's just size and ability in combat in Fire and Blood, it says, basically, if it was just Maelys and Vhagar one-on-one, Maelys may have stood a chance. The fact that Sunfire and Vhagar were there, there was no chance for Maelys. So, you know, it is a good point of distinction. You know, just Vhagar is huge. It gives them such an advantage. But also, one of their advantages was they had Vhagar protecting King's Landing. And now Vhagar's at Rook's Rest. So I think that's an important just strategic thing to think about. Daemon's at Harrenhal. It's not very far. So if there was ever a time for Daemon to go for King's Landing, this would be it.
Yeah, nice. Daemon, take that windy boy. All right, Manny, your favorites roundup. What you got?
So number one is going to be Sir Asshole of House Slaw getting knocked on his ass.
Sexy asshole.
Yeah, so him getting his fucking ass knocked out was fucking great. Only part of the episode I hated 0 out of 10 Targaryen Bros is when he gets back up. Okay, personally. So he just always looks like he hasn't taken a shower in 4 days.
A little dirty boy.
The next thing that I really liked was the dragons fighting. I thought that was like really cool because I always wondered what the hell would that look like. Would it just be like them at a distance shooting fire at each other, or would they actually physically try to, you know, attack each other? And not just surprising, not like Vhagar eating Luke, not like that. I'm talking about like a full-on fist fight between dragons.
Yeah, I guess it literally was a fist fight because in the making of the episode, they actually talked about how they studied how birds of prey fight each other. The whole linking talons and spinning thing came from their research on what birds of prey do when they fight each other, which is, I mean, honestly, so freaking cool. Yeah, I love that they did that research. I love that they incorporated that.
Yeah.
No, it was fantastic. Yeah. And the way it looked and the fight scenes and everything was totally believable. The CGI was on point because I really thought that the CGI would be not that great. Because I want to say that the show started off, the CGI wasn't crazy about it.
The very beginning. Yeah.
Like, yeah. In the very beginning, I wasn't crazy about it. But then like two episodes in, they started getting really good with it. And now it's just kind of seamless. So
I still find some of the POV, like when they're like, they're riding the dragon, you're supposed to the POV, some of those are a little shaky for mine, but anytime you see a dragon and a rider from a distance, it looks awesome.
And obviously Rhaeny's going into battle, talked about that earlier, but yeah, that was one of my favorites there. The beginnings of the downward spiral that Allison is going down. I can just see these things is what it is. And this girl is going to get so wrecked with fucking guilt. Like, who fucking knows? Like, she is lost right now. Everything that she believed is a lie. And then now she's got another fucked up kid coming home now, right? That's going to be all messed up and shit. So I'm curious as to where that's going to go. And then with her being obviously pregnant, that's going to be even more interesting now. I'm interested about that.
Well, but I mean, with the moon tea, likely, hopefully she's not pregnant anymore.
I certainly hope not, because I would hate to see for Crispin Cole, whatever, to have a kid.
She was like sweating out when Littlefooter came in to like bother her. Oh, yeah.
But I think the thing that I'm really excited for, it's what's going on right now, is the Aemon warm-up. Because we had his The Making Of episode. We could have all looked back and said, oh, it's when he got his eye taken out. No.
It was the pink dragon before that.
No, but what really did it was he already had a fucking chip on his shoulder. But when Baby Gone went in into the club and did the thing that he did, that was when I was like, oh, now it's a man in the making now, right? Because now it's different. And then he embarrassed his brother in front of the cops. I'm like, wow, this guy's got fucking balls. And then now he's out there with fucking Vhagar doing this shit. And like you said, standing over fucking Aegon's body with the sword in his hand. I'm like, okay, now I want to see where this goes now. Because now his character became vastly more interesting to me. Because again, they're just making him a three-dimensional character. There's something more dynamic going on with this character, which is why I liked all of it. And which is why I hated the path that Daemon is going down in this road. Because Daemon's becoming a two-dimensional character now, to where I felt in season one, he was more of a three-dimensional character. So yeah.
I also Daemon like that you spelled Baby Gone, Baby -G-O-N-E.
Gone. Yes. Baby Gone.
Baby Gone.
The cool thing, as much as I hated the fact of what happened with Rhaenys and stuff, it was fucking cool to fucking see Vhagar and Aemond on it. And Aemond's just looking like a badass now, you know? It's making me more interested in his character, whereas before I just saw him as like a little punk. Like, oh, you're a little punk and you think you're tough because you accidentally ate someone else's kid with your dragon. But now it's like, okay, the way they've been kind of building him up, like the warm up. Oh, this is the tactics we're going to use. And this is all this stuff. Like, he's clearly researching wars. He's like doing these things. He's becoming like this like general almost. It's really interesting. His character is blooming now. So it's like, I'm kind of curious as to where that's going to go. 10 out of 10 target eyebrows.
Yeah, we haven't rated enough things. We always do this. I did rate a few things. What do we want to rate? The dance, I guess. I mean, I'm going to give it 10 out of 10 Targ eyebrows because it was really well done, even though it was depressing.
I'm going to give it 9.5, and I'm going to dock a half a point because I thought they had a chance to have Vhagar black out the sun. And also there was a point where it looked like Rhaenys had a chance to fly away. I thought she kind of looked like a chimney sweep. There was just something about it where I was like, I don't know what it is, but she just looks like a chimney sweep right now.
And, well, I mean, she has been like taking fire. For literally.
Sure, for sure. Yeah, for sure. There was just a very like Mary Poppins aspect of it where I was like, I don't know. Something took me back to watching Mary Poppins, and it took me out of the episode for a moment. So 9.5.
Actually, Dean, who has not read the books, made a comment. Oh, so like, are they not getting burnt because they can't be burnt?
It's an and excellent I was point. Like,
yeah, because they wondered literally that myself. Took fire in the face several times. And of course, we know like from Daenerys that she like walked into it's the resilient. Fire and she came out, and not in the show, obviously, but in the book, she came out with no hair. Yeah. Okay, it burnt her entire head of hair off. But in the show, it was like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to walk out naked and burn off all my clothes, but not my hair. Fine, whatever. I did actually think that was an interesting point because we do know from the early days of Daenerys, way early in Game of Thrones, the book, she was able to withstand like super hot water and stuff. So while Rhaenys did look a little bit like a chimney sweep, she should have been way more burned than that. And so should have Aegon. Meleys and Sunfire were exchanging dragon fire in their riders' faces for a bit. So yeah. Yeah, it's interesting.
It's going to be an interesting continuity thing they're going to have to cross when they go into the Duncan Egg thing, because there are certain Targaryens who are not very resilient to fire in that story.
I don't know. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, we'll cross that bridge.
As we close out the episode, just want to once again thank Tommy, not only for being here to chat with us, but also for being a longtime supporter of our show with the TKOK Podcast Network. And thank you to our listeners for joining us for Hot D Takes. Manny and I will be back next week to cover season 2, episode 5. And as I'll never again trust any episode titles from anyone other than HBO, we're back to not having a title. For the most current news and updates about the series, make sure to follow at Geek Saga on Facebook, Instagram, and or Threads, TikTok, Twitter. But also, please consider backing our Patreon at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
Thank you for listening to the Geek Saga podcast. If you like what you heard, please check out other Geek Saga entertainment endeavors, including the Sagas and Sass webcast and podcast, and Ice and Fire Con.